It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Shri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys. Hello and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, and when I'm not co-hosting this podcast with my partners, Shri and Brian, I serve as Partnership Acceleration Lead at Flywheel, a division of Omnicom that helps enterprise brands improve their SEO and SEM and grow their e-commerce business. My CPG Guys partners are otherwise occupied today, so I am hosting today's episode all by my lonesome. Before we get to our guest, I want to ask all of you listening to this podcast, help spread the word about this community we've created called the CPG Guys. Beyond just sharing our podcast with your friends and your colleagues, by the way, you should be walking around the office asking people to open up their iPhones, show you their podcast app, and say, why are you not subscribing to the CPG Guys? You should be that millet. No, I'm just kidding. But if you are using Apple or Spotify as your preferred listening platform, please do us a favor. Leave us a rating. Go in, scroll down to where they have it, whatever rating you want. My favorite number is 5, but you can choose whatever number you want. But really, it's important because giving us a rating actually helps feed the algorithm and makes our podcast more findable by CPG retail professionals like you who are looking to be both educated and entertained in this industry. Of course, we are also very happy to be part of an impressive collective of highly rated podcasts, including Fast Forward, hosted by our very own Brian Gildenberg, CPG Scoop with Reese and Jennifer, and the super red hot FMCG guys over in Europe with Daniel, Efrain, and Christine. If you're not listening to those, you should subscribe to them as well. Great news. Don't have to do it very hard. Just scroll down in the digital liner notes of this episode. Links are all in there. And of course, we're incredibly proud of our allyship with Next Up, formerly known as Network of Executive Women, whose mission it is to advance the cause of women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. Next Up has really terrific networking and educational resources available to its members. Of course, Sri serves as a director of Next Up. Please, please check out Next Up. It is a phenomenal purpose-driven organization. Links to our podcast, our sister casts, our landing page on Next Up, and of course, the social media profiles of Sri's two performing artist daughters, Rhea and Lara. Although if you're not following, like, Rhea's got tens of millions of Spotify downloads. Her new song and video, Messy, was just released. You should check that out. And of course, Laura's new album with Cat's Eye is going to be debuting in June. So just go to the digital liner notes of the podcast. Lots of hyperlinks. You can find it all there. All right, so let's get to our conversation. 15 years ago, I moved from Philadelphia to Cincinnati, Ohio, when I joined dunnhumby, as it was at that time, in a strategic partnership with Kroger. And one of the accounts that I was given the responsibility of engaging with from a CPG perspective was the J.M. Smucker Company. Well, my guest today, she was my main point of contact there. Her career journey started in the hospitality sector with numerous roles at another J, but not J.M. Smucker, but rather J.W. Marriott, before shifting into consumer goods at Smucker, where she spent nearly 17 years. The most recent position was Omni-Commerce Strategy. 3 years ago, she joined Gelmar, the manufacturer of CLR house cleaning solutions, where she now serves as the director of e-commerce. Really excited about reconnecting with my old friend. Please join us in welcoming to the podcast, Valera Shoemaker. Valera, hey, how you doing? What's going on?
Great. Thank you for that fabulous introduction.
You know, I still think about those trips that I would make. It was since Smucker was up in Oroville, which was a little bit west of Akron and southeast of Cleveland. Like, honestly, for me to fly to Cleveland, I would have to go to the airport early,
right?
Sit in security, go through. It was like, it was faster for me to drive. So I would just drive up through Columbus the 4 hours to make my way. And basically, you know, you knew you were in Oroville because it was the home and the primary business associated.
You could smell the strawberries.
And you could smell the strawberries at the factory. Absolutely. So we really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to share with us your personal experience. And I'm really excited to talk to you about thoughts around the evolution of omnichannel and e-commerce. Before we get to our questions, why don't you start with a high-level overview of, you know, what you're doing right now and a little bit about your company?
Yeah, thank you. So as you mentioned, I'm currently the director of e-commerce for Gelmar. We're better known as the makers of CLR brands and Tarnax. And so, as you said, I've been there for a little over 2 years now, and I spend about 75% of my day on Amazon. And that is strategy all the way down to hands to keys reporting. So we're a very small company. We have a little over 20 employees. And so we do a lot of support from agencies, and we ourselves do a lot of work. So when I'm not working on Amazon, I spend the other portion of my day helping with our retail media. And so focusing on managing marketplaces and then consulting on how we want to spend our dollars in terms of on the retail media platform.
Thank you for that. I'm really not surprised by the fact that you're spending 70% of your time on Amazon. I saw an eMarketer report yesterday that was talking about the relative size of e-commerce for the major players in the US. Like, Amazon is nearly $500 billion in e-commerce. The next biggest player is Walmart at 94. So 5
times the size of that, and then it goes down from there. So yeah, if you're in e-commerce, and particularly, as you mentioned, retail media, if Amazon isn't like the vast predominance of your attention, you're probably not allocating your time very efficiently, right?
Right. It's the world's largest marketplace. So you get those inherent eyes on your business no matter what.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that overview. In the digital liner notes of this episode, we're going to include links to your LinkedIn profile and Gelmar's corporate website where our listeners can go and learn a little bit more about you. A lot of them like to multitask, like 90%+ of them listen to this on their mobile device. So why not just toggle over and multitask as you're listening to our conversation go on? You can learn. And a Tarnex is something that I love because I have all sorts of silver products and I use it to keep them in the best shape in my house. So I actually find it very therapeutic. On a Sunday morning, I'll turn on the talk shows, Meet the Press and Face the Nation, and I'll put out my silver items and I'll just sit there and polish along as I'm listening.
It's wow.
Multitasking, right?
Bless your heart.
I do it. There we go. All right. So let's get to the questions I've got for you. I'm really excited to reconnect with you on what's going on. I made mention of your professional career. I'd love for you to like really highlight within what I shared, you know, some of the pivotal roles in your career that you think really served you well in preparing for the role that you have at Gelmar.
Yeah. So you highlighted that I spent a lot of time in category leadership, and I did. I spent almost my whole career in category leadership. And that was everything from the fundamentals of category management, where you're understanding, hey, what are the key metrics? What are these buyers looking for in product success to keep them on the shelf, to keep them competitive in the marketplace? And so really loved the foundation that gave me, but it then teed me up to go into an insights role. And the insights is where we're really learning about the shopper journey and how are shoppers coming to different stores? How are they making decisions about which products they're going to buy? Even getting into consumer segmentation, how do different consumers engage with different accounts? Price pack architecture. That's huge.
You're talking my language. Oh, you just made my heart skip a beat. PPA is awesome. Particularly important in an omnichannel world, right?
Exactly. And so learning those fundamentals early in my career was really helpful. But even, you know, price elasticities, they come to life so much in an omnichannel environment. And, you know, we were looking at them as studies at a period of time. And now there are so many tools that will help you look at those pricing dynamics on a rolling basis. So dynamic and so helpful to have that background. And then channel strategy, really understanding what does this channel mean in terms of our broader strategy and what are we trying to accomplish through these different channels. And then I had this wonderful opportunity to pioneer a role called Retail Insights. And that's where I really started to dip my toes into the space of e-commerce. And I never looked back from there. It launched me into the omni-commerce space where I got intimate knowledge with e-commerce data. And we can debate, you know, accuracy of that data, but it helped me understand how to measure in an environment that's really difficult to measure. How do you make decisions when you're unclear about the accuracy of the data, but we need something to provide some sort of direction? So how do we combine research with the e-commerce data that we have available? And so all of that really teed me up for the role I have today. But I will also admit, when I joined Gelmar a few months in, one of the employees that managed our operations asked me, Valerie, how much of this role did you know before you came into the job? And I said, 50%.
Wow.
So I've really learned so much because of it being a small company and the breadth of the role. But that category leadership background gave me those entrepreneurial skills to really be able to learn and excel quickly.
That's so true. I have a friend of mine who started her career as an assistant brand manager at Mondelez for Oreo, right? And her responsibility was like, there were so many people working on the Oreo brand. Like, it is a multi-billion dollar brand. And so her exposure to all these different capabilities was very limited. And then she went over to like a much smaller startup brand. Suddenly she's like, I'm drinking water from a fire hose. There are all these things I got to do and I've got to pick it up. But, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. You pick up a lot of things. You know, I think back to the insights role and the pivotal role that Retail Insights played. You know, you and I both dabbled in, obviously, at the time when dunnhumby was aligned with Kroger, dunnhumby shop, which was, you know, for the time, like the foremost data asset. Like, it put traditional panel data to shame when you have 50 million consumers and your ability, as you mentioned, behavioral customer segmentation to be able to create an audience, right? That was like the, we didn't really talk about it like audiences back then because we weren't so focused on the next aspect of what retail media was, but we were creating customer segments. But in effect, that was the precursor to being able to create targetable audiences that could be used for retail media, but to be able to actually find them and understand them, see what they were doing. And then even to your point, layer on top of that, other types of more attitudinal insight to really create that rich picture. And yeah, maybe some of the data wasn't necessarily as accurate, particularly when it came to e-commerce, but you know, there's still a lot of information. You work with what the best available is and you make decisions off of that. And you hope that you keep trying and improving the quality of the data. Like, I think you look at arguably the world's most elite retailer, Walmart, right? They're obviously marketing their Luminate data. I think we all understand that the accuracy of the in-store data is somewhat challenged by the ability to tokenize cash transactions, which is still a large part, but they're moving in that direction. They're taking actions to try and encourage people to identify them through the use of the mobile app or scan and go, other things like that. And is it ever going to be as rich as, say, their sister company, Sam's Club, where 100% of all transactions are attributable to the household? Maybe not, but you know, we work with the data we have. So thank you for that, Valera. I want to shift to a little bit about D2C because I'm always fascinated with building the direct-to-consumer business channel. I want your thoughts on it. Like, is it right for all brands to get into D2C? And what would be your reason to actually consider it or not consider this for the portfolio, say, that you're managing now? What's right? When is it right?
Right. That's a great question. So I think every brand needs a brand site. We sell products. We only have so much space on a product to put information. And so we all need to have a site where we can engage with the consumer more deeply. Whether we choose to sell through that site or not is a different question. And I think if you're a startup, you may not have any other options, right, than to sell through a direct-to-consumer site. So if we just focus on what my background is the bigger brands, then it's
that already have the brands that have already scaled brick and mortar distribution.
Right. So when we think about those brands, including Del Mar, you know, it really becomes a question of role and purpose because there is time and there is expenses associated with a direct-to-consumer site. And so, you know, it's really about on the evolution of what you're trying to build, are we prepared to do that? Because those direct-to-consumer sites need to deliver a different experience than what consumers can get on Amazon or on Walmart's website or in the brick-and-mortar stores.
How do you compete with that, right? If you want to go stand up your own business, why do you want to compete with something like that and to what end? That's a really great point.
Right, right. And so for me, it's about that differentiated experience. So it could be something like small batches. You know, when we're talking about the food industry, there's a lot of foodies out there and maybe you can't get that in the store.
Niche products, right? That may not justify the distribution elsewhere,
right?
But they have to come to you to get it.
Yeah. And they have a place and a purpose. It could also be a place where you're testing and learning. So maybe you're offering a new scent or a new flavor and you kind of want to see how consumers respond to it before you put it out there. Because once you put it on Amazon, that page is built and those reviews come in and you don't have control over taking it off anymore. So you might want to do something like that. But
you can use that information as a go, no go, if you want to roll it out into distribution, and you can use the learning you get and the user generated content to help grease the skid, so to speak, to get that distribution listing in brick and mortar and to justify getting even like a warehouse slot at an Amazon. So you're doing 1P versus 3P.
Right, right. Exactly. I'm going to give an example from my past. Milk-Bone. When I worked at the Bam Smucker Company, Milk-Bone, one insight we had about pet owners was that the trend was humanization of pets. And I live and breathe that every day with my three pets. They are treated like children. They are treated like part of the family.
They are.
So they created the ability to customize a Milk-Bone box with your dog's picture on the front. And while treats came in the box, the purpose wasn't to sell more treats. The purpose was to create loyalty and an experience for those consumers. So I bought one. The treats are long gone, but the box still remains. And so it's a constant reminder of that brand. And so I think for me, that was a really neat experience that they were able to do by having the ability to deploy through their website. Of course, you also asked, when is the right time? And I think we've just spoke about, where are you on the evolution with Amazon? Where are you with the evolution on the marketplaces that are biggest for your products? And if you don't feel like you've had those built out enough and you have more capacity, there's an innate audience that's already there versus your direct-to-consumer site, which you've got to drive people to. They have to want to come to your site. So I think you build out those spaces first, and then you have to have a role and a purpose, and you have to know what you're trying to accomplish, because leadership's not going to continue to invest in a direct-to-consumer if they don't have a purpose or a means to show that you're serving that purpose through this channel.
I think you hit on something very important, is consumers need a reason to want to go to your site. And if they don't, that means your customer acquisition cost will go through the roof. Like, if they have no meaningful reason to want to go to your site, then you've got to convince them to go there. And that means a lot of money to get it done. And that's a real challenge for a lot of brands. You know, I was talking with someone who was an Amazon seller. They were on a previous podcast episode. They were out at the Accelerate conference at Amazon last year. And I said, when you're doing advertising offsite for Amazon, are you driving them? Because Amazon said you can either drive them back to your pages on Amazon, or you can drive them to your own D2C site. You have a D2C site. Where are you driving them? He said, no, I'm driving them to Amazon. I said, well, why would you do that? Your margin is much lower. And they said, yeah, but I'm a 3P seller. It's easier for me to drive a conversion if I send them to Amazon, because they don't have to fill in all their registration information. And I'm going to get all their mailing address and everything because I'm a 3P seller. But it's more efficient for me to drive more conversions if I push them through Amazon and then deal with bringing them over to my D2C site once they're already comfortable with the experience.
Right.
So there is a real strategy to this, and brands have to think about D2C may be right for you, but to your point, you have to, even if you lead with bringing them, if you're a 3P seller and you bring them in through Amazon, you've got to make sure that there's a cogent and meaningful reason why they would then start to engage with you as a brand through your D2C site, rather than just continue to do it through Amazon, just do a subscribe and save. So at some point, you just make the decision that, yeah, I may be getting less of a margin, but if I can get them into a subscribe and save on Amazon that has very little chance of attrition,
yep,
that's something I might invest in all day long. So interesting.
Right. Well, and Amazon is now marketing their fulfillment services for those reasons, right?
Of course they are. Of course they are.
And they still get the sale.
So thinking about this transition from kind of the brick and mortar category management retail insights into e-commerce, I'd love to hear what challenges you faced in aligning traditional kind of brick and mortar retail strategies with the dynamic nature of e-commerce or omnichannel. And how have you addressed those? Because I've got to imagine these come across as you've moved from a very big scaled company to more of a nimble enterprise.
Well, and what I've learned too is that a nimble small enterprise can kind of fly under the radar. We can have a different model. Some of the larger brands, they've been a 1P model for a long time, and we have options. So, I think what's really interesting was that when I entered the space, they had all their products, like small, low-cost products listed on Amazon, and they were getting crapped out. And no one knew, what do we do?
Everyone knows a crap. A crap is can't realize a profit. For those, we're not using slang profanity here. It's an actual term at Amazon. it's funny. We love to break down the acronyms here, because we find that if we take the time to do that, it lets our audience that may be just coming to us for the first time,
true,
they can catch up and they can get up to speed. They're not behind and we all get obsessed with our acronyms. I have a colleague of mine who literally all he does is talk in acronyms. And when I have him on the podcast, I'm like, You have to. I have a little sign I hold up, say acronym. I'm reminding him, stop using those acronyms. But you, so they had their entire assortment on Amazon. Like, they wanted to have everything there.
And that's okay to want to have everything there. But in the formats that they had them, Amazon wasn't making money. And so they would take the product out and then sometimes start reordering it again later. And they couldn't keep a consistent flow. And so I did something really gutsy. One of our products was making 25% of our sales. And it was one of our core staple products. But it was not making money. It was coming in and off of the platform. I discontinued it. I came in with a bigger size.
Wow.
I know. They asked me, are you sure you want to do this?
Did you get marched up to the senior office? Like, what the heck are you doing?
Well, I presented it before we did that.
It's better to, it may be selling a lot, but it's also losing.
Right. We had a larger size out there. And what I was able to do was show them that in the periods where Amazon put the product off of the site, we did see that we remained whole in terms of dollars. So we had to understand that we were probably losing some customers, but those customers hopefully were going in store, fingers crossed, but we stayed financially whole. And now that formulation is our most profitable formulation in larger sizes, and it's a more stable platform for us because we've found ways to differentiate it. And so we're really designing our strategy around what can we make work on Amazon. But we engage cross-functionally, and there are times where, you know, everyone wants to engage, and I embrace that. But we get questions about, oh, you know, you should really price products at like $12.29 or $12.99 because that's very appealing to the consumer. And I understand that, but Amazon is a dynamic pricing environment. And so we've partnered with some pricing tools, and sometimes $12.08 is the price. That's the price, and it works good for us. And so, you know, I never want anyone to feel like their ideas aren't valuable, they aren't embraced, but, you know, how do we educate them to help them get on board? But I think that the other spaces, when you talk about omnichannel, so you talk about like Walmart, for example. So we have products that are in-store, we have products that are 1P, and we're actually engaged in their marketplace. For us, it becomes a broader conversation because that all goes through one buyer and it's all relevant to that buyer. So we're trying to look at it as, how do we leverage the e-commerce space or the marketplace to sort of tee up opportunities to get the bigger fish, which is in-store? So we look at it, and our approach is that, you know, you're trying to jump a fence and your friend is standing there. They've got their fingers crossed. They're ready for you to step, and they're going to, you know, push you over the fence. That's kind of how we're looking at that from an omni-channel perspective. How do I provide enough data, experience, get some reviews out there, show those buyers that this is a viable product, so then we can make the leap into 1P or in-store. I think it's, you know, the bigger opportunities.
Yeah, people want products to win on site, and SEO is very much about, you mentioned product reviews. All too often, brands are focused on the title, the images, and the A-plus copy that appears on the PDP, and they kind of leave it up to, well, you know, fate will determine user generated content. But there are just so many great ways you can help foster that, whether you, you know, ask your customers for it through social media, or you put a call out with a QR code on your package to say, hey, give us some feedback. It doesn't mean you're going to get a lot all at once, but if you get a steady stream of user generated content, that recency is ultimately going to help you. Because if you don't ask your consumers for their feedback, the only feedback you're going to get more often than not is bad feedback.
Yeah.
Like, the only time someone's going to go to a retail website or your website and leave you as a review is when they have a problem.
Yeah.
But if you're proactive and you ask them, oftentimes they'll just, sure, I'll give you a review. No problem. Not a big deal. It's like what I did at the beginning of this. Like, if I don't ask people to write reviews for this podcast, people, I want a rating on this podcast. If I don't do it, then the only people are going to go there are people who've got an axe to grind. So you need to be proactive in thinking about doing that, right? So let's go back another area. You've talked a lot about retail insights and analytics as your area of experience. Can you tell us how you use those kind of capabilities, data analytics, to inform the decision you make in your e-commerce activities? And are you investing in retail data assets?
Right. So yes, we do. And I'm going to give a shout out to my friends at Profitero because I've used them with my previous employer, with my current employer. It's a really great way for us to get a feel for how are we performing against the category? You know, what should our growth look like? What are some of those top brands out there? And you can look at Amazon's bestseller list. If you can't afford to get some of these, the Amazon bestseller list will at least give you an idea of where you're falling in the space. But it's really great to understand, hey, how much did Amazon grow in this category? And am I growing at that same pace? And should I be? But also, you know, what are some of those people that seem to be moving up in the ranks? What are some of those products that we're keeping an eye on? And like, how are they growing? And are they changing price points? Are they changing the way that they're promoting or advertising? Really trying to get a feel for that. And even before we launch in a category, really trying to understand what's it going to take to be successful. Is this a space that's kind of prime for the picking, or is it a space where it's going to be an uphill climb and we're going to have a pretty big battle? And then what does that mean to us? Is it worth it to go into that spot here, or should we look in other spaces to make that starting point?
So a little follow-up to this, you mentioned obviously accessing market share data through your provider. You can obviously get a lot of different retailers through that market share access. You spend most of your time on Amazon. We made mention of Walmart. Are you even paying attention to your market share numbers at retailers where you frankly don't have the bandwidth or necessarily the interest in actually being able to activate and try and change that? Are you just like, I'm going to focus like 75% of my attention is the insights coming from Amazon, a little bit to Walmart, a little bit to Home Depot or whatever. Like, how are you leveraging that? And are you making that available to the organization beyond you?
That's a great question. So, you know, there's many different types of data in e-commerce, and, you know, the marketplace data, those are ones where you're seeing the broader space of, hey, how big is Amazon in my category, or how big is Home Depot, and what brands are really resonating and ranking with Home Depot? And so I've bought that data over the past couple of years. And to your point, we just recognize there's some spaces where you may not be able to move the needle as much. You may not have as much of an influence to do that. But it's still good to be aware of growth and what could be considered good growth or not enough growth in those spaces, and, you know, identifying those competitors. But do you need to buy the data every year? Those are questions that I've started to ask. Is this like an every other year buy? Is this, you know, what can we activate against? And could we invest in a research study, or could we use those funds more creatively? But I know I passed on buying it this year, and I told leadership, I said, don't take it out of your mind. I'm coming back for it at some point.
Yeah, it's always a challenge, right?
Right.
Because you want to know where you stand vis-a-vis your competition, but at some point you have to make a decision like, are there other more pressing issues that I need to address right now? And I can come back and deal with that later rather than just necessarily, hey, we filled in all these boxes last year and I'm going to fill it in this year. Is that necessarily the right thing to do? That's always a struggle. I want to remind our audience that I'm speaking today with my friend Valerie Shoemaker. She's the director of e-commerce at Gelmar, the maker of CLR and Tarnex. So my next question is, how do you think e-commerce has influenced the customer journey for your brands? And what has that allowed you to do to improve the customer journey?
Yeah, it's helped us bring the broader assortment. And so we are really well known for calcium, lime, and rust. That's our core formulation, our flagship, as well.
That's what CLR is. Now I've just made that connection. There we go.
Right.
Thank you.
And so, you know, that was really what we were thought of. And people will come on the site and see calcium, lime, and rust, but they're now finding that we have other products. And so it's been wonderful to show the full platform, but also encourage people to buy the full platform or more of the platform. And then they're delighted to find out, oh wow, okay, this product is also, hey, it's also Safer Choice. It's also made by CLR brands, and I want to give that a try because their calcium, lime, and rust product works so well. And so we have a lot of niche products. We have outdoor furniture cleaner. We have a grill cleaner. Those aren't always going to make it on every retailer's shelf, but consumers are interested in those products. And so e-commerce has really helped us gain more exposure for the full portfolio.
All right. That's great. So back to what I talked about earlier, user-generated content in the form of product ratings and reviews. How have that wealth of information, right, that comes your way, either the what they leave for you on Amazon or if you capture it on your own brand site or on Walmart and anything, how has that played a role in shaping e-commerce strategies and even product development?
Yeah. Probably more product development, but I'll give you another example of just how we present a product. And so, you know, the first one is that we launched a product and consumers were taking that product and pouring it into spray bottles. Oh, easy enough. We had a lot of consumers saying they were pouring it into spray bottles. Let's deploy a sprayable version of this product. Pretty easy.
They're talking to you, right? They're telling you what they want.
Exactly. Because we didn't know what the demand was. The demand was bigger in a jug form. And, you know, we were talking about the spray, but then it just kept coming up in reviews. And I said, I think they're ready. They want it. Nobody wants to put the extra effort to put it into a spray bottle. So,
oh my God, no.
Right. So we're working on deploying that now. Another way that we've used the reviews that's been really helpful is we have a product that for whatever reason, it's more preventative and people don't really understand what they're buying. And we got reviews that
it's like insurance, right? It's like buying insurance. What am I really buying?
Exactly. Exactly. But they thought maybe they were buying something that it would do something else. And so it's led to a couple different...
Right. It was a responsive, not preventative. Yeah.
Right. Right. So there's a couple things that have evolved from these reviews. One was improving the content, improving the messaging and how we were delivering the product. The next thing was we partnered with a company that helped us provide automated emails. So if you bought it off of Amazon, we automatically sent you an email explaining the product in an attempt to, you know, whether someone would read it or not, but let's just say they open it. Hey, thanks for buying this product. Want to make sure you understand what the product does and how to use it. That way, if they're like, oh, wait, that's not what I wanted, hopefully we can cancel quickly. But managing those expectations. And the last thing that did for us was really reevaluate how we were naming the product. And so we are now going to be deploying a new name for the product that we think is a little bit more clear as well. So
evocative of what the product actually is about. That's
right.
That's it. Like your consumers talk to you. And if you choose not to listen, do so at your own peril, brands. But if you do listen to them, you will likely benefit greatly from all of this content. Because it's amazing how even, you know, when I think about it, how we as consumers are more willing to trust 1,000 people that we've never met, but have actually bought the product and tried it, than we are what a brand says about their product or the retailer says about their product. And that's just the reality. It's about authenticity. And the more authentic you can be in communicating to your customers and accepting their feedback, the better off you're going to be. So I want to shift now to talk about your own development, Valerie, because we talk about this a lot, and I think about I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't have people that I've met throughout my career invested in helping me advance. So I'd like to know, how have mentors contributed to your career advancement? How have you gone about building these relationships? And how have you also turned around and started to pay it forward to other people early in their professional careers so that they can benefit the way that you have?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Peter, you've been a mentor for me in my career since we met back in those days when you were at Dunham.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
We've always kept in touch, and I always knew I could email you and ask you a question, even if it was simple, even if it was, Peter, should I go to this conference? It's nice to have perspective from people. And so my personality is bold. I'm always happy to walk up to someone and introduce myself. I don't allow myself to be shy or timid in those conversations. But when I was working at Smucker's, we had a really nice mentorship program. Great. Take advantage of those opportunities. But past that, I looked for people that I wanted to be more like And so I found reasons and ways, whether it was, hey, I'm working on this project and I know you have this skill set and I would really like to learn more about that. Can I come to your office and just share my project with you for a couple minutes and just gain your feedback? And you start to build a reciprocal relationship there, because then they get a peek view into some of the things that are being worked on in the organization, and you learn something from them. And so I've gained that not only from coworkers, but suppliers, people you meet at conferences, just anyone that I have been impressed with or just got that good feeling of, wow, they're on the right track. They're really smart. Get their business card, you know, get linked up with them on LinkedIn. And I think if you find ways to make it somewhat reciprocal, people are more open to it. But then, you know, to your point, I'm now in a spot in my career, and especially working in e-commerce, you do get a lot of people who are curious about it. And so I'm always happy to help anyone that has any questions. I'm always happy to make time for them. But I sort of try to do the same thing of, hey, let's talk about what you're working on, or, you know, where do you want to take your career? What do you think that looks like? I really find these young people fascinating because they have ideas. They know things. They shop differently. There's a lot of insights we can pull from them. And in fact, we have a young man that works in our organization, and we were talking about Alibaba and thinking about going, you know, hey, how do we do this? This is sort of like an online trade show. Is this something we should venture into? And an idea popped in his mind that I in my whole life would have never even thought of, because my brain just doesn't work this way. But he has friends that buy truckloads of products from Alibaba and turn it around and sell it on Amazon. He said, how do we make sure?
It's brilliant. He's arbitraging. That is just phenomenal.
Exactly. And I'm so happy to give someone credit for that. That's, you know, a really unique way of thinking. And I think these, you know, Peter, you and I still have a lot to teach them about the paths of career. So it can be so reciprocal.
I think about my adoption of new platforms like Temu, right? That was introduced to me earlier this year. And I'm so fascinated because in this rush for last mile delivery to move from the 2 day to the 1 day to the same day to within an hour to within 5 minutes, you know, like the further you move along that end of the spectrum, I've noticed the profitability starts to just, you know, at some point it's so negative, it's crazy, right?
Right.
And then along comes Temu. Temu recognizes, you know what, this drive for urgency is not realistic. Most people are more focused on, I want to save. And if that means I get the package in a week, maybe a week and a half, if I can get, like, you know, a dish soap brush for a fifth the cost of buying it on the platform that gets it to me in a day, I'm okay with that. And so they built a nice little model that's really resonating, particularly in areas of rural America where, you know, the income is not quite as strong and they can save a lot of money. And if you're okay with getting yourself out of this belief that if it doesn't get to my doorstep and I get immediate satisfaction, it can't be good for me, you can save a lot of money by doing some of these platforms. So yeah, I learn a lot from doing this, from just, I do my best. Like, I don't know TikTok, but I know that a lot of kids do.
Right.
And I have to recognize that we need expertise and I need to bone up on what a TikTok shop is and what are the economics behind it and why is it important for brands? You know, why would you sit there and say, why would a venerable old consumer brand need to be on TikTok? Well, you got to figure that out. And if you don't answer it, then, you know, again, do so at your own peril, right? So let's look towards the future, Valor, as we close out our conversation. I'm really curious what industry trends you're kind of watching in terms of how omnichannel consumer engagement will have impact on your e-commerce business. Like what, you know, I feel like I'm doing the Wheel of Fortune final puzzle where I give you the RST, L, N, and E. Like what are those big things that are keeping you up at night that you're thinking about? I do think that these are things are going to have a material effect. What's kind of going through your mind?
Right. I wish I had something fun to say like AI.
Yeah, I know. You can't go to a trade show now unless you say that within the first three sentences.
Right.
Like everyone's got their buzzword bingo card out. Like, okay, she said AI. I got to write that down.
Got it. We're good. We're good. I wish I had something fun to say about that. But quite frankly, I'm looking for keeping a pulse on how the consumers are engaging. Like, where are they going? What's driving them there? The journey is continuously evolving. Yeah. Right. And then I'm also looking for those spaces where the retailer is really trying to build it out and they're going to offer me something kind of unique. And I'm going to give a shout out to Walmart Marketplace on this one because they've assigned us an individual to help with our account. And we're really just getting started here.
That's great.
Right. And they, I don't know that they want this to be a public knowledge, but they're willing to, if you want to run a promotion and they're trying to get a promotional time frame, they've been willing to negotiate on their commission rate to help us get those products out there to be promoted. And so that's a great opportunity.
They want you to see the value of that investment, right? And so they're willing in the short run to say, let's give them a reason. And once they see that there's a reason to believe, they'll start investing. I mean, of course you want to do that. It's a very smart approach.
So I'm looking where the consumers are going, but who's also hungry for the consumers, such that they're going to offer me pretty unique opportunity for me to do business. And I think that they're doing a lot of the legwork to try to get consumers onto their platform. I think it's great for us to try to partner back and take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, as I opened up and I made reference to the fact that like Walmart e-commerce is 94 billion and Amazon is 492, like a 5-to-1. Of course, there's a lot of gap there that I'm sure the people down in Bentonville are very hungry. They obviously put Amazon to shame in terms of their brick and mortar business. Amazon has very little of it. They, you know, their Go stores and obviously Whole Foods. And as they start to relaunch fresh, but Walmart doesn't want to just win in brick and mortar. They want that gap to be closed. They want to be in first. So making decisions to help brands big and small avail themselves of techniques that'll help them grow on their marketplace, that's just good business, right? That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to remind our audience, please go to cpgguys.com. You can find all of our content, all of our episodes. You can filter them on topics like e-commerce or ERG or insights. All of those can help you find the episodes that are most relevant to you. And of course, if you think you or your company has some thought leadership to contribute to this ongoing discussion, drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com. Maybe you can join us on a future episode of this podcast. And of course, if you're at CPG Guys or you're on Apple or on Spotify, please, please, please give us a rating, write a review, let us know if the content that we're producing, like our great conversation day with Valera, is what you want to hear more of. And we can make sure that we're tuning our podcast to be responsive. Because at the end of the day, we want this podcast to be about what our audience is looking to hear about. And of course, I'll finish by saying a thank you to the 28,000 plus followers on LinkedIn who turn to us to be educated and entertained. We're so grateful that you do. And we take that responsibility of educating and entertaining you very seriously. I know like sounds like we're having a lot of fun in this podcast. And that's frankly to make us all feel comfortable, like we're a bunch of old friends getting together after work and just talking about what's going on. And hopefully that's the kind of atmosphere we're creating. Valera, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to talk to us about your career experience, about, you know, working at big scale brands and then, you know, infusing that into a smaller enterprise and really focusing your attention on those activities that are going to drive consumer engagement, drive the business. So thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, this was a great conversation. I just loved learning about how you think about dividing and conquering, allocating your time against the things that are going to drive the most results for your brand, that are going to make consumers happy, how you think about all of the components of e-commerce, both the SEO and the SEM side of things, search engine optimization, search engine marketing, all of them very important, and how you use insights as the foundation to make better business decisions. So to our audience, thank you so much. We love having these ongoing conversations with you twice a week, and we look forward to speaking with you on the next episode of, wait for it, the CPG Guys podcast. Goodbye. The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.